Good morning, Radio for Grownups. Joel Becker on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. It's 9:13 here on a Tuesday morning. Another rainy day. In fact, we have gotten to the point now where they have issued flood warnings pretty much for the whole surrounding area for the next couple of days or so, and we're expecting more rain throughout the day. You know, you hear the our friends over at KCTV5 that are giving us our weather forecast, and Aaron Little does a fine job, but I think when you get to the point where you're saying the chance of rain is at 90%, it's not a chance anymore. It's going to rain. And in fact, the National Weather Service has upped the chance of rain to 100%. And I'm pretty sure that once you get to 100%, it's no longer a chance at all. I know that's semantics, and I am an anti-semantic, but that is the case. Showers today with a thunderstorm. Some of the storms could produce heavy rain. And we are seeing just a little bit of fog here and there as well. Today's high 75, right about normal for this time of year. Showers, storms tonight as well, with that chance of precipitation at 90%. And the overnight low 49 as temperatures really start to drop off at the rest part of the week. Slight chance of rain on Wednesday as well, with a high only reaching about 60. It'll be in the upper 50s, although it'll be nice and sunny on Thursday, and then we'll see more rain coming in through the weekend. Right now, Lawrence Municipal Airport, light rain 65. As we welcome Dr. Wes Crenshaw, this is That Tuesday and the every other Tuesdays that Dr. Wes joins us for this first hour of Radio for Grownups. And what do you think, Doc? When it gets up above 90%, I don't think you can really call it a chance. And definitely when it gets to 100%, it's not a chance anymore.
I call it a celebration because my poor pond has been two times in its 22-year history that it's been as low as it was this week. And I am glad you can, any of that flooding you can send over to my pond. It can take it.
Yeah, it is. Well, I'm sure your pond is enjoying it.
It is. It's coming up.
All right, so 9:15 here on Radio for Grownups on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. It's been a busy couple of weeks news-wise since last we spoke. We have a new Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, it's a busy couple of weeks every 10 minutes nowadays with news. But it's been kind of a difficult struggle these last couple of weeks. It doesn't matter whether you are a supporter of the new Supreme Court justice or his biggest of foes, this situation around the way it has been managed around sexual assault and what we call in the business rape culture and who is to bless and who is to blame in that, this has turned the conversation inside out and upside down, and it's not going away.
Well, it's one of the obviously it's the thing we wanted to talk about this morning, and I don't want to just limit it to the politics of it,
right?
Because in you know obviously Dr. Wes being in the psychological field, we want to talk a little bit about the psychology of it in general, but also how the effect of this whole incident is going to most likely reverberate into our own working environments and so on, because very likely we are going to run into, not that we haven't already, but this is going to just increase the amount of uncertainness, I think, that you tend to have, uncertainty that you tend to have in a workplace environment as to, you know, first of all, what is and isn't appropriate, and also what we can and can't do. Before we get to that discussion, I did want to just point one little thing out, since I've already defined myself as an anti-semantic. I don't know if you heard this, but when the president was speaking last night at the ceremonial swearing in of the justice, he said that Judge Kavanaugh had been proven innocent.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
And well, that's what I was going to say is that, but a lot of people have jumped on his use of the word innocent.
Right.
And that's actually not the problem. The truth of the matter is that by our standards, and I'm not even talking about court standards, I'm talking about societal standards. By our standards, he is innocent in that we're supposed to presume people are innocent unless they are proven guilty. However, he has not been proven innocent. There is a big difference,
right,
between assuming someone is innocent because he hasn't been proven guilty of something and saying that he had been proven innocent. No, there's not been any proof whatsoever that he is innocent. In general, you can't prove that unless it is possible to prove someone's innocence if the allegation is extremely specific. So that is to say, if Dr. Ford had come out and said that this incident happened at this time on this place, and he had a, you know, time-stamped video of him somewhere else at that time on that place, he would have then proven his innocence. In this case, there is no real credible, and I'm using the legal version of that word credible, evidence that he actually did anything. And since we presume people are innocent, he is innocent.
Right.
But he hasn't been proven innocent. But everybody's jumping on the word innocent. It's actually the word they need to jump on is proven. They haven't proven anything.
There's a lot wrong at every level of that. So I should probably qualify myself, as people don't know me as much this way, but I am a forensic psychologist. I have trained extensively in that area, primarily in family law, but I also have testified many times in cases related to foster care, civil litigation. So I'm pretty familiar with this. So I have a pretty good understanding of what happens in a courtroom. And the first thing to remember is, and you're right, we don't want to dig too deep into the court proceeding here, but the first thing to remember is none of these things had anything to do with the courtroom. He was not charged with anything now or in the past. And so the idea of this jurisprudence model of how the job interview went, the review by the people who confirm him went, is inaccurate to use a lot of these levels of evidence, all of these rules of evidentiary entry, and these things don't apply. Secondly, if it were a court, which it is not, no one is ever in a court proven innocent. Too many of us in my age group grew up on Perry Mason reruns.
Yeah.
And Perry didn't, it's so inaccurate. What Perry did was, he and his investigator in Della Street, they all went out and they found the real offender. And they, in the courtroom at the end, Perry put that person on the stand episode after episode, and he proved that person did it and his client was innocent. That just doesn't have much to do with actual defense law. You're trying to get, if you're defending a client from a charge, you're trying to get to a point where a jury will cannot find sufficient evidence.
Has reasonable doubt.
Right. They have reasonable doubt.
And note that this is for criminal cases.
Exactly. This wasn't a criminal case. So there's a lot of obfuscation that goes on in this. But
I don't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to just mention, I thought that was an interesting difference when they originally came out with the concept of Law and Order,
right,
that television program, in that, like you said, all before that, every law-based TV show, and there were plenty of them, there, you know, the Perry Mason type shows, were always focused on the defense area. There was always the Perry, right, Mason and other lawyers were always defense lawyers. They were trying to defend.
They were the heroes. They,
yeah,
were the heroes. There's another show from that era called The Defenders, another example.
And they all were trying to defend someone who had presumably been inaccurately, you know, right, accused of some sort of crime. Law and Order was the first one that, and of course half the show was on the police end of things, but on the when they got to the law end of things, where they were trying to prosecute someone for that crime. And what I always found funny about the show was that, as a literary or dramatic device, almost every week there was a show on, something in that show ended up getting suppressed from the jury.
Right.
Because as an audience, we had to know that that person was guilty, or it wasn't really very much of a dramatic show.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, you couldn't know for sure that a jury was going to find him guilty. So there always was some sort of bit of evidence that basically proved this person was guilty, a confession or whatever, that, you know, a piece of evidence that the police had inaccurately or illegally obtained or whatever, that ended up getting suppressed because they were going at it from the opposite direction. They weren't trying to, like you said, prove innocence. In this case, they're trying to prove guilt beyond a reasonable, yeah, doubt. And to keep that dramatic feeling in there, they had to let the audience know that this person was, in fact, guilty, or at least strongly suggest that they were, in order for the show to actually work. I always thought that was an interesting way that that show had to go.
Yeah, well, and within the context of what you have to do to have a dramatic television show, Law & Order was a more accurate representation. The other one that's really good, that's even more, I think, authentic and does not give you the answer, makes you be in the jury's position, is called The Night Of, and it's on HBO, and it's just a mini series of like 5 or 8 nights. And so those are things that, and you have, part of being informed about these things is understanding some of these details, because otherwise an awful lot of propaganda comes out, like he was proven innocent, it is all a hoax. I don't really know anybody that seriously thinks this was a hoax. There are probably people who seriously are not serious, but it wasn't a hoax. This person very clearly presented what she believed to be true. And what is frustrating, and it is a very frustrating time for women of all ages, and of course the ones I work with tend to be teens and young adults, but I have some, you know, into their 30s and 40s, that are really looking at this not at all about whether someone was telling the truth or not, whichever person you believe, but that it never was important, that whether Ms. Ford was sexually assaulted or not, or was in a what we would call a low or no consent environment, that just wasn't important. That was never going to matter. And so women they're not just feeling that they aren't being heard. They're feeling like they aren't being recognized for very many important events that have been very upsetting to them. There's very few women who haven't had some kind of event that might not meet the legal definition of sexual assault, but it certainly does violate their consent. And this has been frustrating for many years. We're working, finishing up our books, Consent-Based Sex Education, right now. And I named those books 4 years ago, way before this blew up in the national press, because I knew this is what kids and young adults were talking about.
That's even before Me Too.
Well before, yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's taken forever to get these books together, because partly because the culture is changing so quickly, and because once I dug into it, I realized how much there is to talk about. Everything around sexuality, it has to emanate from consent, and that just became even more apparent the last couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, one of the areas that makes this such a hot-button issue, regardless of your politics of it. Like you said, when you look about the coverage of it, either side has legitimate areas of concern.
Sure.
When you're talking about, like you said, women who come forward with you know, allegations, I guess, for lack of a better way of putting it, or stories of what has happened to them, there are horrible things that happen to these people in a number of ways. A, like you said, sometimes they're not believed. But more importantly, even sometimes when they are believed, they are made into the cause themselves.
Right.
That is to say, okay, yeah, maybe something bad happened to you, but why were you wearing that dress, or why were you, you know, putting yourself in that position, or whatever? They're basically creating the victim into the perpetrator,
right?
Or at least the cause, anyway.
Participatory in it,
yeah. And so on, and then also there are so many people that never come out in the first place, never come forward with their stories, not even necessarily because they're worried they're not going to be believed or whatever, but because of other mitigating circumstances. Like, take Dr. Ford's story as just a basis or whatever. There are people who would have the same thing that happened, just assume that that happened as she said it. There are people that would never come out because they were worried about their parents finding out they had gotten, had a beer.
Absolutely.
And so on. And so there's horrible things on that side. And then the other side is also, and I've said this on a few occasions over the last couple of weeks, because it hits closer to home to me, which is, you also have to have a certain amount of empathy for people who are falsely accused of something. And that does happen, whether or not the person is just simply making a mistake. There was a story the other day of a woman who accused, he's a basketball player or something in high school in California, and I mean, just ruined the poor kid's he was getting ready to go off for scholarships to college and was, you know, highly recruited kid or whatever. And she had claimed a rape situation and with him and another kid in a car or something like that. And then later recanted and said, it's not that nothing happened, but it was a consensual act. And the only reason why she said it was rape was that she liked another boy and was worried that that other boy wouldn't want to have anything to do with her if she had been with these other two kids.
Yeah.
And so all of these people, you know, there's, for every accusation there is, there's always the possibility that someone might be falsely accused. And you have to empathize on both sides, not only with the accuser that is mistreated, but also with the falsely accused that is likewise mistreated.
Right. So there's a couple of things to say about that. First of all, the definition in court of an expert is that you can give your opinion. Now, people can, you know, attorneys can attack that opinion or claim you're not an expert or whatever. Believe me, that happens in every case I'm on. But the expert can render an opinion, whereas a regular witness cannot. So in that role, one has to use the best standards they can to determine what is true or more likely true than not, and then make recommendations or testimony to the court, depending on which role you're in. So I am very familiar with this idea of having to figure out who's telling the truth, especially in family court where people are getting divorced. And honestly, nobody is motivated to just tell the pure truth. They're motivated to tell their story the way they believe is most advantageous to their case. That's usually true in any situation, but particularly, as you can imagine, in divorce court, I end up as the court's expert, so I'm not hired by one side or the other, usually. So in that role, one has to learn how to discern what's more likely true. And that, I will explain after the break, what goes into that.
All right. We do have to step aside for the bottom of the hour Fox News here, and then more with Dr. Wes Crenshaw when we come back. Dr.West.com if you want to get more information about his practice in general. And we will continue our discussion on Radio for Grownups here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it. Radio for Grownups, Joel Becker on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, depend on it. 9:39, and boy, I tell you what, every time I hear the little Fox News alert tone, and I don't mean to be critical of Fox News, I'm critical of all journalists. I think that they could be doing a better job, but I always think to myself, when was the last time I heard Fox News alert, and it was really an alert? That is to say, they always come on and they say something, and it's something that's being, you know, covered for a week or whatever, and it's like they come up with, I don't want to say fake breaking news, but, you know, something that's coming out. But this one was
actually
was a surprise.
Real.
Yeah. A real actual alert, and it literally just happened. Ambassador Haley, Nikki Haley from the Trump administration resigning, and we really don't know why. It hasn't been reported yet. There was a note on Fox News that says that the president is expected to speak from the Oval Office at 10:30. And I'm assuming they meant 10:30 Eastern, which was about 10 minutes ago, and it hasn't happened yet. But this is happening so quickly that, you know, it could just be that he's delayed for some reason. And I'll try and keep an eye on what's going on. And if we can, maybe we'll even carry it. But in the meantime, we'll keep you up to date as much as we get information on it. Anyway, we'll get back to our discussion. It stems from the Kavanaugh hearings, but it's really more in general about just the notion of sexual misconduct. And I don't even want to generalize it to say by men, because it happens with both genders these days. But it typically is a male thing that women tend to be victims of. And I said that I thought this is probably going to reverberate into other areas. Now, your area tends to be more involving with kids and sometimes with the relationship involving their parents and divorce and stuff like that. But and I would imagine this is going to have an effect on schools as well.
Yeah, one of the things that's important to remember in discerning facts and opinions and such is that one has to be careful when they talk about how everybody is sort of at risk here. I have been doing this for 27 years, and I have heard every story imaginable, and I absolutely have heard of examples and been involved in examples, both in the office and in court, where someone is not telling the truth about sexual assault or sexual abuse. And those are the minority. What we have to remember is that the vast majority of the stories that exist out there and that I have heard are about sexual misconduct that has gone completely unreported and never will be reported. And the smallest fraction of cases will be people who are making false allegations. The research tells us that the most likely scenario for a false allegation is within the context of a high conflict divorce. And that brings us to the issue you look for as an expert, and that, you know, listeners can apply as observers, is what is the secondary gain? Now, if you use the Kavanaugh example, the secondary gain would have been figuring out how to stop him from becoming a chief or becoming a member of the Supreme Court. Then you have to ask, is the witness, Blasey Ford, sufficiently motivated to come forth and nationally perjure herself in order to make that happen? And I'll leave it up to listeners to figure that one out. But that would be the secondary gain in this situation as it is posed. Without secondary gain, without some plausible alternative to the way that the alleged victim makes the statement, there's not any good reason for anybody to make this up.
Well, I don't mean to disagree with you.
Well,
exactly.
Feel free.
But I just, because I've heard that too during the hearings, the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings, when Dr. Ford actually testified, and of course she had to testify to the prosecutor, and then of course every 5 minutes that was interrupted so that a Democratic senator could grandstand for 5 minutes and then send it back to the prosecutor. And one of the talking points that many of them said when they weren't really asking any questions was to make it very clear that Dr. Ford had absolutely nothing to gain from this. And while I agree that I don't know for sure exactly what her politics are and whether she if she had helped keep him off the court, if that would have been important to her or not. It seems like it would from what I've heard, but I don't have enough personal knowledge to know. But having said that, in most cases, like what you said, there's not a whole lot to gain from coming out with an accusation. But when it's this high profile, for some people, there would be two other potential things to gain from it. Some people crave a certain amount of attention, even negative attention, and want to be famous, even if it's infamy. And there would certainly be something to gain from that. If she, I'm not suggesting that this would be applying to Dr. Ford specifically, but I can see a scenario in which someone might want to come forward with this because it would make them famous. The other thing is that in her particular case, we know that there was definitely a monetary gain to be made. Now, that again, I'm not suggesting that this was her motivation. I'm just saying that there were several GoFundMe pages that came up and so on, in which there was quite a bit of money raised on her behalf. She probably had to spend a certain amount, although the lawyers claimed that they were working pro bono. There was some security issues and others that she may have had to spend money on. I have no idea. But it is certainly possible that she could have made money off of it, not just from this incident itself, but then in the future there's likely going to be a book deal for her. Or say, for example, when you look at Anita Hill in a similar situation with Justice Thomas, I guess I should say, she did make a pretty good amount of money. Again, I'm not suggesting that that's why she did it, but I'm saying that I could conceive of a situation in which someone might be motivated for possible financial gain for coming out. And again, this only applies in a high profile case like this one, where it could lead to fame. It could lead to, you know, movies, or, you know, you being able to tell your story where people would want to pay you to tell that story and so on. So in this case, those are the other two things to gain.
Yeah, I think that it's difficult to imagine if you look at all the people who get into these situations. Very rarely does anyone end up on the positive side of it. I don't think Anita Hill has had a meteoric rise after her testimony. She's been back around talking about it lately. But the upshot of it is, for the broader picture, we really have to be careful making an assessment that there is an equivalency between people who are accusing and people who are getting accused in terms of the numbers of truths and falses. I easily would say at least 98% of every story I've heard, that if it were adjudicated and successfully prosecuted, which is hard to do, would have counted as a legal definition of sexual assault. 98% of those I have heard in my office were no one else knows about. That's an immense number. And the number of people I have run into who have been falsely accused, and those were very serious. It's not like that's not an important thing, but they're a tiny number. And that holds up in the broader research. And I'm in no way saying we should not have due process in criminal or civil cases, which this one was not. I absolutely think we should. And I was very skeptical on the front end of this because, of course, in the Kavanaugh thing, because, of course, it came at a very, opportune moment.
Yes.
Yeah. So one must be skeptical. In our book, we talk about teaching kids to be skeptical consumers of everything around sex, and even online, to be very smart consumers. I think they are smarter than we think they are sometimes, but it's a critical element in our society today to learn how to consume information. And so I was pretty skeptical in the front end, but what I'm afraid we're hearing a lot about from the president and other people is that the whole idea of Me Too, which is simply that a lot of women have been put in sexually inappropriate situations, mostly by men, but not always. I can also tell you examples where women have acted in an untoward way sexually.
But you see that a lot more in schools, for example, with teachers and students.
Well, the majority of teachers who have been adjudicated for sexual misconduct with students are women. That there have been... you can look this up in Kansas. It's a matter of public record. Majority of therapists in this state who have had sexual misconduct with clients are women. But in the larger society, the majority of victims of sexual misconduct are women, perpetrated by their men, by men. And so we really have to support women in addressing this, not turn the entire movement into some kind of conspiracy against men. It worries me that's where we're headed, the quote backlash.
Yeah, well, and I mean, this would apply to you, for example. You're a business owner and you have a practice, and like you said, sometimes even it does happen because of the power structure relationship that tends to occur between therapist and patient, that those kinds of inappropriate actions can occur. So if you had an opening in your practice and someone comes in to apply for that opening and there's an allegation against her, for example, of sexual misconduct, how do you handle that as a potential employer? Do you presuppose her guilt? Do you presuppose her innocence?
In this case, there is a process for that, because the Behavioral Sciences Regulatory Board in Kansas, and in every state, there is some kind of examiner's board, would be reviewing that. So if the person came in and said to me, hey, listen, they let me go from my last job because I was sexually inappropriate with a client, I would say, what is the board doing about that? And if the person said, well, they didn't report it to the board, I would then have to report it to the board, because I'm a required reporter for ethical complaints. And that's really at the top of the list of things that you can do wrong with a client. So that then they would adjudicate that. And the standards for proof there are different, because they're not that's not a crime in the sense you would go to jail. It's a violation of the rules and regulations for the practice of whatever discipline you're practicing. And they can make a number of different recommendations. They've suspended people in the past, usually for a period of time. Most of those people then do not continue because they are going to be tainted. But I would let the board run through its process. But no, I would not hire that person on the front end, because there would be either an open case or I would have had to launch an open case. The same would be true of child abuse or financial dual relationships or a variety of ethics we have to follow.
It's a tough one, and it's a tough position for anybody to be in as a potential employer, as someone, you know, like I said, there's no easy area to be in any of this stuff.
No, it isn't. We've got to wrestle with this. We cannot decide that we know all the answers or everything's a hoax or women are out to get us or whatever. We've got to wrestle with ourselves and with society.
That, for the record, is why they never should have nominated Kavanaugh, and they should have nominated me instead. I said this before this whole thing started.
I was for you, man.
I needed to be a Supreme Court justice, and
you look good in a robe.
I think so.
Bathrobe, maybe. But.
More radio for grownups. We'll wrap things up with Dr. Wes Crenshaw next on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
A gun will travel, reap the card of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire heeds the calling wind. A soldier of fortune is
Radio for Grownups, Joel Becker on the new FM, 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, depend on it. Wrapping things up in hour number one here on a Tuesday morning with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. It's 9:58, so we only have a couple of more minutes left to go to finish up the discussion on, what started with Judge Kavanaugh and now is really just talking about how this general idea is affecting us as a society. So what would you leave us with in the time we have left as regards to this situation?
So here's my advice to people who are parents or no kids. And by kids, I mean everybody up to like 30, because, you know, I'm old. So yeah.
It's amazing how much older kids get as you get older.
They're getting older all the time.
Yeah.
If you want to support the president or Kavanaugh, have at it. I'm not here to tell you not to do that. That isn't my goal. But when you're doing that, be able to say, I just didn't believe Blasey Ford. I didn't think she was credible. Or be able to say, I don't think what happened was serious enough, and it was far enough in the past, and there was drinking involved. I think if he had come in and said, you know, I have no idea what happened. I was drunk a lot in high school. I've asked about 25 women, if he'd have come at it with that, how would they feel? And they all said I'd still oppose him because of his politics, but I would have felt like he dealt with the issue. So if you see this as him as a kid making a mistake, great. What you cannot do for your daughter, your wife, your sister, and all the other women in the world is devalue their experience of sexual misconduct based on this situation. Just please don't go down that path, men of the world.
All right. Dr. Wes Crenshaw, dr-wes.com. Always a pleasure.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks, Joel.
And next week on the Morning News Watch as well.
That is right. Wednesdays.
Fox News next.
1320 KLWN Lawrence and new FM 101.7 K269 GP Lawrence. Depend on it.